Stop. Squirrel time.
You know.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, there have been times, let's see, I don't think we've ever done it on this one, but on a previous podcast.
Uh-oh.
There were times when we went the whole time and thought we were recording and weren't.
Yeah, I don't think it's happened in this one yet.
Yeah. There's only one person who pushes the button.
And yeah, years ago, when this was a lot less technically sophisticated, it was a little more touch and go about whether it was actually going to work or not.
Was it a Radio Shack tape recorder, Alan? No.
That would have probably worked fine.
Oh, we're going to have to explain.
I remember the days of the Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That was a nightmare and a half. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it didn't. Good luck. You know, it was almost a relief when they started charging money and we were like, we can't do this anymore.
Eject.
Yeah. Thank God.
We don't have any topics.
Well, I have a topic. Went on a score report field trip.
She's our intrepid score reporter, Brita.
I did. I was set to the task of visiting the USS Cod submarine memorial museum thing.
Does that make you bubblehead, Brita?
I don't think so. I don't think I qualify yet.
Really serving on this.
I think you have to actually. Yeah, you actually have to like be on it for like a mission or something. I guess.
Yeah,
be one of the crew.
My son is actually too tall to serve on a submarine.
I knew there
was.
Well,
I am not.
I assume there was some sort of height requirement on submarines.
Yeah,
they're very limited on space. Even the new ones.
He is 6'4".
That wouldn't work.
No. So how was it? I'm very curious. I don't think I've ever been on a submarine.
Oh, well, man, you've missed out. It was a lot different than. Well, okay. Let me just say right now, I'm not like one of those military history buff people. I find it all interesting, but I'm not like, you know, like Mike knows all about everything and. You know, whatever. So I had like a kind of a idea in my head what it would be like, but it was completely different than what I had anticipated. And it was the submarine was built in 1943. And so it kind of, you know, it was like a old submarine. It's like a retro submarine. It's got all the, you know, anyway, so you go up the thing to get on, and I had no idea like how submarines were made or like designed or how they worked, but basically it's like a tube in a tube in a tube in a tube in a tube. There's lots of tubes. It's a series of tubes.
It's the
the thing to get on, and there was it a gangplank.
No. Like a plank. I'm looking at the memorial.
I don't know. It was like a rampy thing.
It's a gangplank.
Okay. So you walk up there and it had a deck like a ship.
Yes.
On top where you could like walk around and there's a gun up there. Oh. And this was really cool. They have done the USS Cod so that that's very hands-on. And you can you can sit on the gun and like rotate it around and move it up and down and look through the thing. What's it called?
Is it a scope?
The scope with the crosshairs, right?
Yeah.
And so Mike and I were like rotating it around and moving the gun up and down, and it was fun. It was really neat. And I don't think a lot of submarines do that because the gentleman who was working, kind of like the tour guide, he said that they have specifically made the Cod kind of a more hands-on experience. So it's more interesting for everybody and you get your money's worth for your ticket. And it was just really neat that way. But so we kind of walked around on top you know, on the deck, and it was wooden. It's a wooden deck, like, huh. And you can kind of see down into, like, underneath there. And I kind of didn't understand, like, what how is this built and what is happening? So, I'm telling people, like, what a submarine is like when they probably already know. But, like, there's, like, a ship part on the outside. And then there's, like, the submarine tube on the inside of the ship part. Am I saying it right, Alan?
Yep.
Okay.
If all you know of submarines is, like, The Hunt for Red October,
right,
for example. Like, I hadn't realized that there was a ship part up top either. I just assumed it was all, you know, water, and you had the periscope, but that was the only thing that was up top.
Well,
no, I don't. They're probably all, like, designed differently, I would think, yeah, right?
There was the post-war submarines are radically different from war submarines. The war submarines were a lot more ship-like because they spent a lot more time on the surface than they did submerged.
Mm.
Because they, you know, not being new, you know, all non-nuclear powered submarines spend a lot more time on the right. surface than they do submerged because they can't really run their diesels unless they're, like, on the surface or just right under the surface with their snorkel up. So, when they're actually fighting and, you know, actually doing the deep dives, they're on batteries, which is very limited. So that's why they're more ship-like than the modern submarines. So Bridges is right. There's, like, a ship-shaped hull, and then on the inside there's a round tubular pressure hull on the inside that actually is what, you know, keeps the water out when they dive.
Right.
There's pictures. If you go to, like, the USSCOD.org, they've got all kinds of things. And I'm struck by, you know, we know what it looks like is it's a cross between an airplane and an RV. it's got that general rounded, you know, and everything. It's different than an RV because everything is, like, locked in a place. But it's, you know, you've got, like, narrow passageways and, you know, everything's dual, triple purpose and the bunks are cute. You know, I understand why tall people don't serve on submarines because also you can't be claustrophobic because every space is small.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Every space is small.
So, okay. So we're walking around up on deck, you know, for a little while, playing with a gun, you know, looking, we're, you know, pretending to shoot the sailboat that's out on Lake Erie, you know, that sort of thing. So, that was fun. It was cool. And, so then we decided to go down inside and you go in one level and that's where you're kind of like in and you can see that there's like a ship shaped hull. And then you go down into the big pressure tube part. So there's like a little gap there. Like you go in and then you can go in again to the main submarine-y part. And I have to say that anyone more disabled than me probably would not be able to get in the submarine. Because it was a challenge for me. And, you know, I'm strong. I work out. I do the thing. But it was like kind of awkward and a little bit, you know, getting in there was problematic a little bit. I made Mike go down first because I needed him to let me know if I actually was putting my foot on this the rung of the he was like, yep, you got the foot. Okay. So I was you know, because the ladder kind of slanted away a little bit and you can't see the rung beneath you to put your foot on it. So Mike was the foot guide, but yeah, I got in there and then it was cool. Like it was like, I actually really liked being in there because it was like a Brita size space. Everything was, it was like, everything was like, you know, kind of closed in and I just felt really kind of cozy in there. It didn't bother me at all that, you know, being, I'm not claustrophobic, but it just felt, you know, fine to me. I'm probably because I'm small. I mean, I would imagine somebody who's a lot bigger would have issues like being in that kind of space.
How was Mike in the submarine? He's a pretty big guy.
Mike, how are you in the submarine? He liked it. Come here for a minute.
A squirrel interview.
Right. Come here.
Come here.
Did you feel awkward inside the submarine at all because of the size?
Yes. It was like being in a Trader Joe's, but underwater.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Trader Joe's, but
underwater. Like being in a Trader Joe's, but underwater. Yeah. I was a little cramped for Mike, and he actually dinged his head on one of the, what are they called?
Hatches.
Oh, yep.
He had a little. I, however, can go through the hatch without even bending down. So, I mean, I just walk through. I just kind of step through and walk through. So it was fine for me.
They're Brita sized.
Yeah, they are Brita sized. And I'm looking through my pictures right now. So I was kind of like, I wanted to go on the cod, but since it's not really my thing, I thought, it's going to be okay. I'll go, you know. But I really enjoyed it, and it was really interesting. And I think part of the reason why it was so interesting was because they have made a point to kind of add touches where it feels as if you're there. Like it's you know, you're kind of stepping back in time a little bit. Like the captain's quarters had pajamas on the bed and had a picture of the captain and his wife. I mean, the actual captain and his wife at the time. And they had in one area they had like a laundry lineup with like, you know, boxer shorts and t-shirts and like guys were living there. And it was all, they had the wardroom set up like a dining table because they use it as a dining table, but they also use it for meetings and they used it for entertainment and gambling and, you know, they played records in there. And so that was really, really pretty neat. And they had like a little cigarette box on the table and you open the cigarette box and there's like a replica packet of Lucky Strikes in there. And they had a record on the record player and it was just all very, it was well done. The way they had it done up. And the tour guide even said to us that, you know, in most submarines where you're allowed to tour submarines, all the rooms are blocked off with plexiglass.
Yeah, that's right.
And you can look in, but you can't go in and sit. I mean, I was sitting at the table in the wardroom, you know, holding the teacup that they had. And, you know, it was neat. It was really cool. And all the guides are very personable and very knowledgeable. They love to talk about their submarine. And we went through and I took a lot of pictures. And wow, just how the inside of it, I mean, there's so many widgets and so many wires and tubes. I mean, there's little tubes, big tubes, there's torpedo tubes, there's... If you look at the pictures, it's like lots of tubes and lots of dials and widgets and things that I can't even imagine what they were for. But one of the things I was really struck by was the personal touches and like in the living spaces. And for instance, okay, there was like a kind of a junior officer's room and there's three bunks in there and... you know, a couple storage spaces. And this is very near to the captain's quarters. And on the wall, they had like a tip down, like a sink that folds up to the wall. And when you want to use it, it, you know, you fold it down. But on the wall next to the sink.
Like Mal's.
Yes. On the wall next to the sink were three little cup holders with glasses in them. So every man there had his own little cup to use. So like, what a nice thought. Like somebody designing the submarine thought, well, we've got these three guys in here and they're going to use the sink and share the sink, but they should all have their own cup. And so they installed like cup holders. I just thought that was cool. And in one of the machine machine rooms. They had a little box of emergency rations. It was kind of like, you know, break glass in case of emergency type thing, emergency rations. And, you know, it was like, it had little instructions. They had to be, the rations had to be changed out like quarterly or whatever. But there's lots of little things like that where it was like somebody thought about these small details that I just really enjoyed. And it's fun because you can go around and look for these details. You know what I mean? Because you can go through every room and you move through the submarine and you move through, you know, the hallway with the wardroom and the captain's quarters and all the junior officer quarters. And you go to a different room and then, you know, it's neat. You get to see the kitchen. You get the one room that they did have plexiglassed off was the toilet.
Probably got people trying to use it.
Yeah, yep. I can imagine like somebody's on the tour of the submarine. They're like, gotta go.
Yep.
They don't want you pooping in the toilet. So, so that was all really cool. And we get into. So I want to mention that the weekend that Mike and I went on the submarine this past weekend, was it? Yeah. Yeah, it was. Was the last weekend that the submarine is open.
Oh. Like,
yeah, well,
for the season, not for,
for the season, because they closed down for the winter. They can't let people on there in the winter.
Because it's under feet of snow.
Right. Yeah. And so we went on the last weekend, and it was kind of like a lucky thing we did, because the man who's like the president of the USS Cod Society, the group that takes care of the cod and runs the tours and the whole, you know, shebang, he was there. And he was kind of like, you know, talking to people, and he was giving little, like, you know, history lessons and showing people things. And Mike, what was the name of that room below the conning tower?
The control room.
Control room.
I'm looking at the schematic.
Yes. Okay, control room. So we get into the control room. It's all very dark, and they have like maps around and all the widgets on the walls. And the tour guide said to us, and you're not on a tour. It's kind of like a self-guided tour, but there's people around that will answer your questions and love to talk to you, that sort of thing. So we get into the control room, and the guy said, oh, you know, the president of the association is up in the conning tower. And at that point, I thought of Joel, our guest Joel. And I remember him giving me the task of, if you can do it, get into the conning tower. And I thought, here's my chance. So Mike and I are kind of like hanging out in the control room, looking at all the things. And like up the conning tower is like, you're in the control room, and then there's another tube coming out of the ceiling, and you go up the tube into the conning tower upstairs, like upstairs.
It's like a habit.
Yes. That's a good, yeah, it is like a habit trail. So it's really funny. So we're kind of hanging out, and the guy's up in the conning tower with other people talking, and a little boy goes up, and a couple people come down, and the present guy in the conning tower says, does that lady want to come up here? I'm like, yep. And I do my best to get up the stairs or the ladder. It was a ladder going up the tube, and I get up there, and it's super cool. And I got to look out of the periscope.
Neat.
And we were shown Alan could probably explain this a little better than I can, but we were shown how the computer worked. And it's a very tiny, tiny little space up there. So in the middle, you have the periscope. And all around the walls, there's like different stations, you know, like kind of widget stations of dials and switches and knobs and stuff. And he said that when they're like being active, there's 11 guys in that space.
Yikes, fellas.
Yes, like shoulder to shoulder, each at their little station doing their thing.
There's a picture of it. I think it's a reenactment, but on the COD website, there's a picture of what that looked like.
Yeah.
And it's they're like shoulder to shoulder. I mean, they're crammed in. They're way tighter than you would expect.
Right.
It looks like a keg party.
it looks like a keg party in a dorm room with like 30 people in there.
Yeah. There was just like a handful of us up there, but it was already still kind of like hot and crowded. So, but Alan, can you speak on the computer thing?
Well, it's an analog computer. It's what they use to calculate the torpedo, you know, do the calculations for the torpedo runs.
So is it an Enigma machine?
It is, huh?
No.
Is it one of those Enigma machines?
No, it's not.
Yes.
It isn't. It's
they had one on well, it what go, keep going.
It's they used to use those they use those a lot. It's basically an analog computer, which is basically like dials and cams and stuff like that, but it was specifically designed to do the data calculations for launching the torpedoes, because they had to figure out how far away the target was, and then they had to set the torpedo. They had to figure out, you know, where to fire it and how to fire it and all that kind of stuff. So that's what the computer was used for.
It reminded me of like somebody like being a spotter for, you know, rifle shooting, really.
Yeah, that's kind
of, you know, what it, yeah. Yeah. Like, well, you got to figure out how far and the distance and how long is it going to take to get there and that sort of thing. And he actually was able to like spin the dials around and show us how it worked.
Oh yeah, because it actually works. It's working. Yeah. It's fully restored and working. Actually, the website, the wiki page for this says that the Mark IV torpedo data computer is fully restored and functional. It also has four operational diesel engines that they fire up a few times a year to work. And the engines were made in Cleveland at the General Motors diesel plant.
Which is probably why it's in Cleveland, you know.
Right.
So it was really neat. One of my favorite rooms, you mentioned an Enigma machine, Jay. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite rooms was like kind of this communications and something room. I don't know. They didn't have labels on the rooms, but it did have one of those code machine. Mike, what was the name of the code machine? Right.
It's not an Enigma machine.
It's better because it's an American
machine.
It's a code, I don't know, some sort of code machine.
And while the British cracked the Enigma, nobody cracked the U.S. one. So.
Yes, Mike got scolded by the president of the submarine thing because he was calling it an Enigma machine. And the guy actually goes, okay, now you need to go apologize to the machine. And Mike walked by, he's like, I'm sorry. It was really funny. But it was really a fun tour, and it was like $12 or something to get in. And free parking, by the way, which is
inconceivable.
Inconceivable. One of the rooms was like the cafeteria room, like the, I don't know what they call it in
the mess hall.
Thank you, the mess hall. But I thought it was really neat that the benches and the tables were all on little wheeled tracks on the floor.
And they could be locked in place, I'll bet.
They could be locked in place, but also pushed back to the wall, I would imagine.
Probably.
And the whole thing was really, really great. I enjoyed it. I still don't know anything about submarines other than, wow, that was really cool. But it was good. It was a good tour. I'd actually like to go back again because there were so many little details that I probably missed. I'd love to take a look again.
I'd like to see that one too. Interesting. Yeah. The Wikipedia page says this is the only submarine on display that has not had stairways and doors cut into the pressure hull for public access.
Oh,
visitors.
Yeah.
Visitors use the same vertical ladders and hatches that were used by the crew.
Yeah, so
there you go.
It's pretty enough. You know, if you're not real, I mean,
sounds
I guess
like
small,
they could take that thing and pick it up and chunk it in the lake, and it'd be like a Lincoln submarine again.
Probably
Lake Patrol.
Yeah,
but
only if Brita gets to run the 25 millimeter.
There's probably some of those old codgers on the cod that take care of it that are just dreaming for the day that Lake Erie floods and the submarine floats free. And, you know.
The day the
runner again, boys.
Yeah.
They're waiting for the day the Canadians invade.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, we're just going to push her back in.
Apparently, they fire the gun, too, on occasions.
They take a picture.
Oh, I did not know that. That would be cool.
Like blanks and
stuff. Mike, sometimes they fire the gun.
They have pictures on the webpage of them firing it.
I want to drive up and visit now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't come yet until spring. Yeah, you know, until lakes thaw out.
And by spring, we don't mean February. It's
June. <Yeah. laughs> June would be good. Yeah. It was cool. It was really, really, I liked it. So thank you, Joel, for making me go.
Can you imagine that when that thing sailed, there were 60 men on board?
Yikes.
No.
Yep, 60. 54 enlisted and 6 officers. Can you imagine? Now, it says the length is 312 feet, but that's not the pressure hulls. So that's not that's just, you know, stem to stern. And a lot of that volume is not where people can be. So
yeah, torpedo areas and
well, engines. Not even that. It's just the pressure hull is much smaller than the actual length of the submarine. So,
torpedo data computer.
Yeah.
At the end of the, you know, your little self guided tour, they had the kind of a room. I think it was one of the torpedo rooms. Really, I don't know. Anyway, but they had a room and it kind of had, kind of museum type pieces and little placards that you could read. And they had like the battle flag and they had the breathing thing.
Oh yeah. The escape trunk.
No, wait, the what lung? Something lung.
The aqua lung? No, that's different. No.
Munson lung. I don't know what he's saying, but it recycles your carbon dioxide and you keep breathing oxygen.
It's a rebreather.
Rebreather. Yeah. I don't know. Some sort of lung. And, Momsen. I mean, little things like that. And Momsen lung. Yes. And, that section was really neat too. And, it had started raining. So they had to close off the exit and we had to go back the way we came in. So, kind of like the double tour, but it was again, it's like a self-guided thing. You can be in there as long as you want, really poking around.
Holy shit.
What?
Okay. This is totally off the topic and not related at all, but I was just reading about the Mumpson lung.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a thing they used for, you know, escaping submarines, but, you know, it says, this is so funny. Mumpson lung is no longer used aboard modern submarines. It's been replaced aboard U.S. Navy submarines. But I can't even say it. I'm laughing so hard.
We broke out.
What?
It's been replaced aboard the U.S. Navy submarines by the stank hood.
The really? Stank hood.
Who named that?
Oh, no. Alan's having an asthma attack.
There we are.
Damn, sorry.
Are you okay?
Yeah,
you all right?
No, it's the stank hood.
Stank hood.
But yeah.
STANKE. Stank hood.
Oh, jeez. They also have a little gift shop. At the USS Cod. Mike got the mug. It has a skull with a torpedo through it.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
No.
But we enjoyed it. And we'll have to have Joel back on soon to have a chat about stuff. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Now that you've been in a submarine,
that is my squirrel report.
Now Jay just has to go visit one.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure there's a submarine museum ship somewhere around there.
Well, one thing I have done that's analogous, not really comparable, but I have my son and I many years ago visited the Collins Foundation brings World War II airplanes to various.
Ooh.
Yeah, and in fact, they just lost a B-17.
I saw that.
That was awful, but They came to Nashua Airport, Nashua, New Hampshire, when, about 8 years ago. And Liberty Man from my blog comments, he was there along with some other people. And it's a kind of a similar thing. You get to go up into their, they've got a B-17 and, oh my gosh, I'm like trying really hard to remember what else they had. The entire, everything related to them is about the crash today. So,
oh yeah, of course.
They had several of the bombers. I want to say B-17 and B-24, but that may not be exactly accurate. They also have a P-51 Mustang. Yes, B-24 Liberator. There we are. That's the other one. But and it's the same idea. You can go in and the entire thing is open for you. You could sit in the cockpit and you can get into the tail gunner bubble, and there's like 50 caliber machine guns everywhere, and it's really cool. And the one thing that I never realized is those planes were tiny. If you're used to even like a 737, which is not a big plane by any stretch.
Except it is.
Yes. But like compared to like a 747 or, you know, the big double decker ones, it's like a little tiny, you know, puddle jumper. The 737 dwarfs either the B-24 or the B-17. This is going to be one of those shows where the people that know things are going to be listening and yelling and, Jay, you're an idiot. But, you know, the crews were, I'm trying to like pull up some information so I don't sound really stupid, but, you know, the crews were minimal. You know, you had pilot, co-pilot, you had your bombardier and a navigator, I think. And I don't think, why do they not have crew? Why do you not tell me the crew?
On a B-24?
I'm looking at B-17 right now.
Oh, B-17, there was like 8. There's pilot, co-pilot, bombardier, tail gunner, belly gunner, top gunner, and 2 side gunners.
Yes, the gunners. That is correct. Or not one.
And a radio operator and a navigator, I think.
Remember that now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and in the space they had, and these are also non-pressurized, mind you. So basically you're at, 25,000 feet and it's like 20 below and the oxygen's thin. And these guys are up. God, it's just amazing. And it's this tiny little cramped quarters. And they would fly, hours and hours and hours on missions.
Oh yeah.
It's just, it's inconceivable. And you know, now people consider it microaggressions if you look at them funny. Yeah.
Throughout history, wartime accommodations were pretty awful for everyone. Yeah. I think they're better, probably better now than they've ever been anywhere, at least in the U.S. Navy.
Mm. Good Lord. My son's station now looks like a dorm room.
They're insane.
It's actually nicer than the dorm I had in college.
But at the same time, there is, it's an all-volunteer military. They're trying to retain good people, and they can't make it shitty because nobody's
staying. Yeah. So,
they're competing with everything else.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things they talked about on the COD is how important morale was on the submarine. And I think you say your son's thing looks like a dorm room, but I'm glad we're able to do that for them.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But they're saying on the submarine that the submarine food was all very good. And there was a lot of like recreational things that they did, like gambling and card games, and they played music. Like they had the record player and they could pipe music throughout the whole submarine. And it was important to keep, I mean, these guys were in the tube under the water for months together,
yeah.
You know? And, so it was important. And I think it's just as important now, you know, so I'm glad we're able to do it.
I bet it smelled so bad.
Yeah, they did say also that a lot of things on like were relaxed on the submarine. Like the uniforms were really relaxed. They were dressed pretty casually. There was not a whole lot of like if your senior officers walk by you, you didn't have to stop and salute or do anything like that because you're all stuck in the tube together and it's like you're constantly, you know. So a lot of that sort of stuff kind of fell away. It was interesting. So, and the USS Cod only had one wartime casualty, and that was a man who there was a fire on board and he ended up outside of the submarine, and he and another, man were kind of like, you know, outside all night in the water, and they got exhausted, and one guy survived and one guy died, and he was the only wartime casualty. So,
oh, yikes.
Meanwhile, yeah. They sunk a lot of ships. So,
yeah, firefighting is very serious. All yeah. Recruits learn how to, they learn how to do all of that, masks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, that's one of the worst things that can happen on a ship. Any kind of ship is a fire.
Yep.
Which is kind of funny if you think about it, because you're literally surrounded by water.
Yep.
Except that, you know, that doesn't really.
You matter. Rely on this structure to keep you out of the water.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
You can't just fill it with water.
Right. That's the thing. You can't. Yeah. You can't just like, whoops, let's you know, submerge it and put the fire out. No, you can't do that.
Just dunk it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean that's they're pretty serious about that. Like my son was telling us, you know, I mean they do the full, you know, firefighting. You get the gear, and it's really hot. Like that's the one. Thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Especially considering that he was doing this in, you know, Great Lake, Chicago, in July.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that probably also smelled really good.
I'd want to do the Great Lakes in July more than I'd want to do it in January.
Yes. True.
He picked the right time to go.
Yep. Yep. But, yeah.
That's cool.
Now it's something else to check out.
Yep. I was just looking.
So I wouldn't just mention when the COD is open. Hours of operation is now I can't find it. May 1st through September 30th.
Oh, okay.
So, you know,
I was looking through
Memorial Day to Labor Day, kind of that, you know, that section. So
I was looking through a list of museum ships,
mm-hmm.
and it turns out there is a submarine on display in Oklahoma.
In their ocean?
In Oklahoma.
In their inland sea?
Muskogee, Oklahoma has a submarine.
There's a Muskogee, Oklahoma?
Yeah, of course there's a Muskogee, Oklahoma. You never heard the song?
Okay, from, yes, that's the joke.
He was making a joke, Alan.
Oh, I get it.
Uh-huh.
Like actually, there's been a couple of different songs. There's that one, and there's what was the one? We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee, Oklahoma.
What?
We don't take our trips on LSD. You never heard that one?
No, but keep going.
You do, Alan. No. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh, we're almost done with the show.
You want to look at something. Look at the cockpit of a B-24 Liberator. It is just the most astonishing. There's like more dials and
widgets,
and
it's crazy.
I really would like to see the inside of a submarine now. Compare. It would be interesting to compare.
You can see.
I mean, I'm sure I can just look it up online, right?
Yeah, they don't exactly publish photos of active submarines.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that one guy got in trouble for that, right?
You can see some. There are some. There are some more modern submarines. I think you can go see. I think the Nautilus is somewhere. You can see the Albacore.
Oh my gosh. First combat submersible. 1775.
Yeah, the Turtle.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You didn't know that, Jay? I did not. I always thought the Hunley.
Fought in the Revolutionary War.
Yeah. Like, whoa, wait.
And blew up a ship.
Destroy the HMS Eagle.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Let's go down to the bottom. What are the most... there's a lot of them. Holy shit.
It is an educational show, Jay.
Yeah. Yes, it is. That's right. That's why we have the educational tag.
I don't know. I'm trying to find a more modern submarine that you can actually tour. I don't know if there's any actual nuclear subs that you can tour.
Nuclear.
I bet Joel would know. Yeah. There's lots of World War II submarines and post-World War II submarines that were like, you know, made in like the 50s and stuff like that, but still weren't nuclear. I think you can tour the Nautilus. I was trying to find...
The Musket class, that's what I think of when I hear submarine. It's, you know, like Los Angeles class.
Oh, yeah, the 688 attack subs.
That's like the, you know, like that's the image that pops into my head when I hear the word.
They're retiring those because they're out of date.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because to me, they're, you know, I still think of them as modern, but that's because I'm old. So
they predate Brita. Let's put it that way.
You can tour the Nautilus.
Where is that?
Where is it?
Doesn't Captain Nemo get mad?
It is in Groton, Connecticut.
Groton.
All right, the next time I go there.
But that was the first nuclear powered sub in 1952. So
there's a Virginia class.
Yeah. Oh, and I wanted to tell Brita this will matter to you. The COD was a Gato class.
Gato.
And the Gato class submarines were named after the cat shark.
Aha, interesting.
Gatos. And there was a whole bunch of them made.
Is that like Domo Arigato?
No.
I got to lay on the bunk.
That's like Gato, Gato, like. How did the bunk feel?
It was bunky. it was okay. I was like in the middle one. So it was very enclosed. But again, I don't mind that. So
did you actually say I'll be in my bunk?
I did. I thought it. I did think it, Jay.
I'm just like, you know. Nice. You kind of have to. You're like, I'll be in my bunk.
Yeah, but the bunks were very cramped. You had enough room for you.
Yeah.
And
don't sit up.
You know, don't sit up. I would think that you'd learn that really quick. Don't sit up.
Not only that, but you shared your bunk.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Our bunk.
Yep.
Yep.
They slept three shifts in those things.
Yeah, so that was pretty neat. If anybody comes to Cleveland and wants to go to the COD, who comes to Cleveland on purpose? I don't know. But
we did. You
know. Well, you did, but you...
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I have never been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It is right near the COD, though.
Yeah, it's right across the street.
It's right across the street, so you could do both in one day if you'd like.
On that.
We've got stuff in Cleveland. Yeah, people just don't know about it.
You have Little Italy, too.
We have Little Italy. Little Italy.
There's a, in addition, if you really like ships, there's, in Cleveland, there's also several other ships you can see.
What?
There's the,
you know, what was really weird? The USS Cod is like a kind of a classic Cleveland school field trip, but I'd never been on the Cod before.
Huh.
And neither had Mike, and he grew up in Cleveland too. So
there's a couple of Great Lakes freighters that are museum ships there too.
Oh, Edmund Fitzgerald?
Very similar, yeah.
Not that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get on that one.
It's funny you mentioned that, Brita, because that's like that's your version of the Constitution.
Yeah.
Like a huge, like, I don't think there's a school in Eastern Massachusetts that didn't have at least one field trip to go see the Constitution.
I've been to the Constitution. That's cool.
It's pretty damn amazing. It'd be even better if they loaded the guns when they shot them at the condos, but that's just me. Like, oh, you're complaining about the noise? Try this.
Yeah, the Constitution's cool.
That was a good deal when they were like, "Oh, you don't like the noise? Oh, let us do it every half hour on the hour, then. Fuck you."
Oh my gosh.
Well, what's cool about it is it is a commissioned U.S. Navy ship still. Yeah. U.S. Navy runs it. This isn't some private organization. So the city can say absolutely nothing about it. And the Navy ship can do whatever the fuck it wants. Because it's not, you know, it's not like some museum ship and, you know, where the city can say, oh, no, you can't do that.
Right.
So
they're like, we'll take half the harbor by eminent domain. Fuck you. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the one? There's a ship in Maryland where they fire the gun. I think it was the Constellation. Maybe it was the Constellation. It's in the harbor. It's in the same harbor where the fort was.
McHenry.
Yeah. Fort McHenry. But they fire like the noon gun on that thing like every day or something. So
it's interesting. There's also the battleship New Jersey, right? Oh, yeah,
the New Jersey in New Jersey.
But it's like
cool. That is a cool ship to go see if you're ever in. Which it's just funny because it's in, you know where the battleship New Jersey is.
It's like right across from Philadelphia. It's like right on that.
But you know what city it's in New Jersey.
No. What?
It's one of the biggest shitholes in New Jersey.
Newark.
Hackensack.
No.
What?
Campbell.
Oh, that's right. We went there 2 years ago.
It is a place where you literally do not want to break down your car or have anything else go wrong with your car or go anywhere in your car.
You want to minimize your time, actually.
You're probably okay in the New Jersey parking lot, you know, for the battleship.
Yeah. But
you don't want to be leaving there after dark. You don't want to stay.
Don't venture out.
Right.
Because,
Man. Camden makes Philadelphia look like a vacation spot.
Oh, okay. Philadelphia was a vacation spot. Thank you very much. Everything in Philadelphia is Betsy Ross or Rocky.
Yeah.
Basically.
And that sounds course, like the most greatest like death match.
Betsy Ross versus Rocky.
Well, only Betsy Ross is responsible for, you know, a hate symbol according to
Colin. Yeah, she's racist now.
Right.
She is. God. Oh my god.
I like that. That was like a natural segue. They're just
that was good, yeah.
Just discovering that Gandhi had unsavory beliefs.
Gandhi
about
was a
sleeping
fascist.
With children? About yeah. sleeping with children or something else?
No. About lesser classes.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that. Well, he also liked, you know, sleeping with children, so.
Yes, ooh. He did.
Yep.
No wonder he was such a pacifist.
Ugh.
Yikes.
There's another cool ship that's in Philadelphia.
I can hear everybody Googling that now. Like, listen to the show. They're like, what? Gandhi? Pedophile? What?
Yeah.
Enjoy.
The USS Olympia is in Philadelphia. And what's cool about the Olympia is it was one of the Great White Fleet ships. I think it was a cruiser, but it was
1895 until 1922.
Yeah. So it was, but what's cool about it is a steel ship, and it's got like you can tell it's like one of those transition ships from sailing to steel. Yeah. Because it still has like the captain's cabin in the back and the wardroom and all the cabins for the officers and all that kind of stuff. And the crew still slept in hammocks and all that kind of, you know, but it was, you know, it's all steel powered by a steam engine. You know.
1922.
Yep.
It served it till. Another one is, oh God, I'm gonna massacre this and people are gonna crucify me, rightfully so. But in Chicago, there is, I think it's a captured German sub.
Cool.
Yep.
I think I heard that.
Yes. U-505. That's what it was. Yep. Captured by the US Navy June 4th, 1944. And it's part of the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago, which we visited in, when the hell? Oh my God, it was like 2012. Holy crap. Anyway.
has the distinction of being the most heavily damaged U-boat to successfully return to port.
You know, it's part of the Museum of Science and Industry. You can go tour the U-505. No, we didn't actually go on board, but, and that's, yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of like you look at the U-505 and you can see, you know, it's kind of like the COD. It has like a deck, you know.
Yeah, that's how they made them.
So, just interesting. Just all these interesting, you know, you wouldn't exactly expect a German submarine to be on display in Chicago, but there it is.
There's a Russian Foxtrot sub in San Diego you can go see.
At least San Diego is like on the water, you know. Like,
well,
Chicago is
too.
It's on the lake, but it's not on the ocean.
Yeah, but you can sail from the ocean to Chicago.
That's true.
Erie Canal.
Yeah, 15 miles on the Erie Canal.
Oh, man. Hey, look, we're almost out of time.
I wanted to amend my Gandhi statement.
Oh. Okay.
Apparently, he used to sleep nude and bathe with young girls to test his chastity.
What a story. Oh, no, I wasn't doing anything. I'm just testing my chastity.
So he was the Maharishi Epstein.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't buy that for a minute.
Yeah.
Gandhi, I'm reading this article. Gandhi seems to have taken a special interest in his female followers based on how young and attractive they were. When one of them grew older, she found herself being replaced in Gandhi's bed by his 18-year-old grandniece, Manu. So hey. I'm sure that was just a very strenuous test of his chastity.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
That's the story.
I wonder how often he failed that test.
So often you won't even notice.
Oh, we have to keep trying until I get it right.
That's right. Eventually. Oh, Jesus. One of these decades.
Someday I'm going to be able to resist you, honey. And then I'll have to replace you with somebody younger.
Right.
There you go. Anywho, were you wrapping up?
Yeah, but I wanted to have one teeny little rant.
Yeah. Ooh,
okay.
What this rant's about.
So we recently had another case of the fake hate crime. The girl.
Is this the girl with the hair?
Yes. Yeah. The girl that falsely accused her classmates of cutting off her hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like every time one of these happens, we get like three reactions.
Yeah.
The first one is from the people that say, well, you know, these are the same ones that do the whole thing where they say, well, you know, you have to believe all women because even if she lied about that guy that raped her, that there's plenty of others that did or something like that, you know? So it's like, okay. Well, this hate crime may have been fake, but there's lots of other hate crimes. And so we should believe her and pretend it, you know, cause America's awful and white people suck and all that kind of stuff. And then there's the people that are like, you know, well, you know, this, you know, oh, this making these hate crime, false accusations should be criminally, you know, you should be criminally liable for making false accusations. But the worst are the ones that say, well, you know, the bad thing about these fake hate crimes is they water down the reaction to all the real hate crimes. And I'm thinking, you know what? Are there actually any real hate crimes in the traditional definition of hate crimes? I don't mean the, you know, minorities attacking white people, because we know those aren't legitimate hate crimes, because, you know.
Because he was wearing a MAGA hat and he asked for it.
Right. But where are all the real hate crimes? Because, you know, if there were any actual real hate crimes, we would be inundated with them 24/7 instead of all the fake hate crimes.
Yes. That's all we'd ever hear about.
Right. They wouldn't have to invent hate crimes if there were enough real hate crimes. But every time, you know, it's like clockwork. Every time you hear one of these, you know, hate crimes and the media gets all spun up, a few days later, oh, well, that was a fake one.
Yeah. You think they would learn by now?
The the last one I can recall would be James Byrd in 1998.
The lynching.
Yeah. Well, he was dragged behind a pickup truck.
Right.
And I think
technically a lynching, but he was attacked and drugged and all that.
Two out of three participants were executed. You know, you don't get much more serious than that.
Right.
Yeah.
That was an honest to God real hate crime. If you want to, you know, if you want to create, you know, we can't just call it assault or, you know, attempted murder and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if you want to throw the hate crime in there, fine, throw it in. But that was a legitimate one. Where are all the other ones? We're supposedly in a cesspool of hate crime in America. And according to the news, it doesn't exist.
Well, they've moved the goalposts right now. Hate crime can be just language.
Oh, yeah. Disagreeing with a liberal is a hate crime now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, we just went through 8 years of if you disagree with the president, you're a racist.
Right. Oh, climate denying is a hate crime now, too.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
And what is it? Oh, referring to someone as an illegal alien is punishable by $250,000 fine in New York City.
What?
Mm-hmm. About that.
Holy crap.
Since New York City solved all their other problems.
I'll bet Brett Kavanaugh can't wait to hear that fucker.
Yeah, so much for free speech, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, so anyway, I just, you know, that's just something that really pisses me off, is this. It's all
if you are going to, first of all, I disagree very strenuously with the idea of a hate crime.
I do too. I think it's ridiculous.
You know, because it's that's a step away from thought crime.
Yeah.
It is a thought crime. You're saying this murderer or assault or whatever it was somehow worse because they didn't like the guy. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to, you know, what about, you know, I mean, people murder other people for all kinds of reasons, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them are, it's because they hate them. Sometimes it's they're crazy. You know, I mean, it's, you know, determining the psychological state of the person that, who cares? Just,
right.
You know.
Well, let's just, I just did a Google search and it was hard to find some examples. I typed in hate crimes and it just gave me kind of definitions, blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of, you know, and then I finally Googled recent hate crimes and I went to the news tab and hate crimes in LA County hit highest point in nearly a decade.
Okay.
But there's no examples.
Of course not, because they're all bullshit.
Well, as you said, Brita, they move the goalpost.
Right. And then so I go down the list, okay, white girls accused in hate crime after assault on black classmate. We'll see how that turns out. And then I get down to transgender woman shooting in Dallas, hate crime. And then CNN says, 1 month ago, New York police say there's been a surge in anti-Semitic hate crimes.
Yep. Yep. And do you know who they're perpetuated by?
Gosh, I can't even imagine.
The Amish.
Yes, Amish. The notorious Amish jihadists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there you go. And hate crimes can be just they're giving an example here of a hate crime as vandalism, such as graffiti or swastikas, you know. Right.
Yeah, but those all turn out to be done by whoever owned the place anyway.
Not necessarily. Like, well, you know, New York City, they're saying there's lots of people, like, you know, writing Hail Hitler and then with the swastika or whatever. And they're counting that as a hate crime. So I think they're just looking at any sort of crime, including vandalism, that is motivated by some sort of, you know, ism hate. You know, a lot of those racism,
4chan kids.
They're counting it as a statistics for hate crimes. So.
The OK symbol is now a hate crime.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
This isn't the clearest sign that we need a mass extinction event. I don't know what is. That a group of internet trolls as a joke.
Uh-huh.
Started a rumor that stood for white power, and it is now officially recognized as a hate symbol, the OK symbol.
Yeah.
Making a circle with your finger and thumb is a hate crime, a hate symbol.
I saw this perfect timing. I saw a meme today, and it was the Pepe Frog guy. Pepe. Yeah. Whatever, the frog, and I think it was from 4chan or wherever, but they're trying to make the peace sign, you know, the two fingers up, they're trying to make it into another hate crime hand signal, and it was really funny. It was like the two fingers, like one symbolizes it symbolizes the two genders.
Ah.
Good.
And then the rest of your fingers kind of form a G shape, and it's like a, you know, a hand symbol being like anti-transgender or gender, blah blah, whatever it is. But I just thought that was really funny. I was like, oh man, what's next? What is next?
Next thing, well, clearly the shocker stands for white power.
I'm trying to. Well, okay.
I don't even know.
This is going to send a bunch of people to Google going, good dear God, Jay.
Yeah. Yes, Jay. Thank you. I just did it with my hand. I'm like, how is that white power? And he's like, oh no.
Shocker.
George W. Bush, right? White power. Yep. See, there we go. Oh gosh. But yeah, you know, interesting times and all.
Here it is. Oh my God, I found it. Two genders. Keep your pointer and index fingers spread apart to clearly track the two Venus symbols for the male and female of genders. Fold your thumb over to make the G prominent and readily recognizable. Make sure both fingers at the end, your ender fingers, are folded inward. It's an alt-right hate sign against multiple genders.
Okay.
But they're making it up. They're doing the, you know.
Yeah, exactly. See, now what I'm doing is I'm making the Vulcan.
Nudge. Upper. Oh, what could that be?
How can we twist this into, you know?
Well, it's originally the Hebrew blessing thing or something. So Roddenberry stole it from the Jews.
And then what we do is we conflate that with the Mork from Ork, Nanu Nanu. That will make that like, that's the grand high.
Oh, God.
This is only the highest level grand wizard KKK dragons make this sign. And then when it's become like the, we're going to be like, it's the fucking handshake from Mork from Ork, you nitwits. Oh.
Serious yep. hate crime, Jay.
Exactly. Nanu, nanu.
Clearly, because, you know, space racists. Come on.
Okay. You can't even say aliens. Like, no. If school is going to have, I'm not kidding. If you're going to have like an astronaut and alien day, it's astronaut and what the hell is it? Space creature.
Oh, boy.
Because they can't say alien.
Oh, no. Come on.
I'm not making this up.
What about the movie?
Apparently now it's going to have to be Space Creatures. Sigourney Weaver in Space Creature.
That's just dumb.
Yep. We are just, you know, we are racing towards idiocracy. I'm waiting for Ow My Balls. I'm just waiting for it.
I thought that was what was that show where they beat each other up and
Jackass.
That was Ow My Balls, oh, Jay.
It's close. It's not exactly Ow My Balls.
Yeah, but close enough.
All right, y'all. I think we've
time to go.
Good show, fellas.
Yeah, it was good.
Awesome.
People are either really interested or bored to death. So,
well, whatever.
I am.
They're hungry. Not paying us. Yeah. We can talk whatever we want.
I'm hungry for whitefish, though.
Oh,
I was talking cod.
But cod, yeah.
That's racist.
Whitefish. Okay. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.